We have one of my favorite education experts in the state of Connecticut back on the show. She is a fan favorite as well. That is Fran Rabinowitz of the Connecticut Association of Public Schools Superintendents. And it was interesting, Fran, earlier this week I learned that lawmakers here in Connecticut were going to come together and they were going to continue pressing a piece of legislation during the session. And it has strong bipartisan support, which... really not a shocker here, to push for more mental health experts to be put in our schools. So we don't really have to dive into why. We know why. But my question is, how in the world are we going to attract somebody with a specialty like mental health expertise in our schools when we can't even fill positions for teachers, science, math, Spanish, special education, right? I mean, would you say that's still a disconnect here in Connecticut? How are we doing with teacher shortages?
Well, I think that the teacher shortages are incredibly real and right with us. They are certainly more dire in the most challenged districts, your Hartford, Bridgeport, New Haven, West Havens, you know, those shortages are greater. The greatest shortages and the lowest resiliency, so to speak, in gaining more positions is in the special education area. You know, statistics were just shared the other day where it is one school psychologist to every 450 children. And that is an average. So you can imagine in some of the districts that, you know, school psychologists are not to be had.
Right.
And
I'm not laughing to be rude. I think it's crazy to me. And this is where I try so hard on this show to make sure people understand that just because lawmakers, not all, but most lawmakers, when they say, you know, we addressed this and nothing was done, they can check a box saying this was a priority for me. But in reality, ask the people in our schools. We are struggling to get special educators, to have people handle kids on the spectrum, to have people, I mean, for goodness sakes, I think even some schools have said that they can't get PE instructors. So I just think it's a little comical when we're saying we need to invest in this. No one's disagreeing, but can we please figure out how do we get English teachers and math teachers?
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. We absolutely have to figure that out. And we've been saying that. You know, superintendents have been working with the teachers unions. You know, I talked to Kate Diaz and Jan Hatchadil, you know, 3-4 times a week about many issues before the legislature, one of which is the teacher shortages. And the fact of the matter is, until we address teacher shortages and teacher retention in school districts, all of these other wonderful, visionary things that we want to do with kids will not be realized until we take care of the shortages. And, you know, quite frankly, I am really, really worried right now because of the ESSER funding and the fact that that federal funding is going away. And I'm wondering, in the midst of the shortages, how many teachers are going to be laid off from different districts, especially the challenge districts, because of the funding. So it's a double-edged sword. And I also want to add here, Melissa, that one of the greatest shortages that we're facing, and, you know, I co-chair the special ed, statewide special ed task force, one of the greatest shortages that we're facing are in the area of paraprofessionals, and that's in the area of special ed especially. And that is very frightening.
It's incredibly frightening. And you and I both know, Fran, because we've been connected for many, many years. You know, my brother being on the spectrum, my younger brother, this is something very near and dear to me. And every time I read that there has to be a cut in school budgets or that we need to make up something somewhere, they are the first ones on the chopping block, which I find extraordinary because in a lot of ways I noticed I have a kindergartner, as you know, and what's interesting is when I meet with his teachers, I think there's one child in Chase's class that's on the spectrum, but a lot of kids in the class use the para. And the reason they use the para is because of things like what these lawmakers are yelling about. They need people to talk to the kids when they have anxiety. They need someone who will help the kids find ways to express themselves in a healthy way. Like when I sit with Chase's teacher, she says, you know, the para who works with this child who's in the class also is assisting maybe five or six other kids in the class when the time is necessary. So I don't know if people realize that paraprofessionals actually right now, the ones that have stayed employed, are doing exactly what lawmakers are looking for, which is to address when children are having behavioral issues. I don't think people understand that.
I would totally agree with you, Melissa. And I'll tell you something. I mean, I am all for more social workers, counselors, school psychologists, all of that. And we need it. And certainly some children absolutely need that really trained intervention. But to be honest, many, many children just need an adult that's mm-hmm. with them that it can listen or intervene when they're having, you know, some emotional issues. And a trained para who is, you know, very familiar with the children is an incredibly valuable asset. Mm-hmm. And I think we've really got to look at that. I've talked a lot about paraprofessionals with, you know, several people. And, you know, the salary is certainly something that we need to look at. The other thing is health benefits. And, you know, the state has tried somewhat. You know, they had a $5 million grant last year for health benefits, but we need more. You know, that's what the paras are telling us they really need. And I think that's where we have to intervene.
Yeah, and I think that needs to be a call to action as well. I mean, obviously, from the education standpoint, you and the folks you work with, you know the value of these people. I just don't know if our government, if our state government understands that these are not actually disposable people. They are not actually working with just a small population of children who are dealing with a disability. They actually could be answering the call that all of you are yelling about, but they're the first on the chopping block every time we run out of money in any school district. It's really a huge disconnect there. So we have Fran Rabinowitz here from the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents, and we were talking about teacher shortages. I did want to stay on this subject, but also kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about early education, preschool teachers, because we know that has been a real problem is filling those positions in Connecticut. And we know we're trying to pay them more and we're trying to, you know, have all these incentives for graduate students to stay in the state and all of that. But it's interesting, Fran, and you don't have to, you know, comment on this because it's very technical. And I didn't really prep you for this. But earlier this week, I actually had Senator Fazio on, who is a member of the Finance, Revenue and Bonding Committee. And he wants to try to cap and even eliminate some of the annual renewal fees for some professionals who have to get licensed each year. And I was reading, this is crazy, it says renewal fees in Connecticut for preschool teachers per year is $1,000. And when I read that, I mean, I exploded. I just couldn't believe that was true. And it's in other articles in Connecticut. It's just mind-boggling to me that is a thing. I'm curious, though, if you can share with us, what has Connecticut done to, I don't want to say make it more affordable, but more attractive for people to even want to be early childhood educators? Also, though, what are we not doing? What are we missing the boat on to try and get people to want to enter the industry of early childhood education?
Well, I'm really glad you're addressing this area because it really is incredibly important. You know, the governor convened a Blue Ribbon panel on early education. I was part of that panel. And honestly, over and over and over again, it was around the fact that early child care teachers just are not paid enough money. I mean, honestly, Melissa, I was not even aware of the fact that many of them are eligible for food stamps. Many of them are eligible for Husky because they are making so little money in being child care providers.
And that is criminal. I heard, that's crazy.
Yes, yes. And I heard over and over and over again from them, you know, I could hear their caring and dedication. They're the people that we want to leave our children with. And yet they are so underpaid. It really is, I believe, a crisis area. You know, there are plenty of slots open in the state for child care, but they can't get the staff to fill them.
It's just so inexcusable. That's wild.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's something we have to look very seriously at. Now, the governor has put in, he has a plan over the next 10 years to really fund and continue to fund the salaries every year and up them. The problem is this year he took, I think it's $70 million from the K-12. Well, that doesn't solve anything, you know, if you're pulling from K-12 to fill early care. There's got to be dollars in other places in order to fund this and to make it sustainable and to make it a priority for everyone. And, you know, I can't say enough about that. I believe that businesses should have incentives for their workers where they pay a part of the child care. You know, the government can't do it all, but I think it should be triaged, you know, with business and the parent themselves and government. But if we really think this is a priority from, you know, and our workforce is a priority, then we have got to put our money where our mouth is. And honestly, I feel very strongly about that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't rob Peter to pay Paul. I mean, give me a break.
No,
That's not the answer. And I don't know. It's just so inexcusable. I just think it's very hard when we're at one side of our mouth saying that our kids are our number one priority and that we need to, you know, we need to shape the future and we need to make sure that they're not only getting great education, but that they're also in safe and great environments. And I just don't know how you could say that, but then in the same breath say, but we're not going to pay them. I mean, you talk about incentives. I agree. If we could have businesses that would incentivize and pay for some of the schooling. I think if you could cut how expensive it is to get a degree to become a preschool teacher. Like, I don't even – is it the same degree? You have to get a teacher's degree just like you would if you were to do K-12?
Well, you can – we worked out a system that's based on a national system where there are three different levels.
Okay.
And, you know, the highest level being a fully certified teacher for preschool. But there are different levels that you can attain, you know, one of them being an associate's degree or even as low as having 12 credits in early child care. And I think that is really appropriate. But we need more. What we also did on the certification committee, I don't know where the $1,000 comes in, because what we did on the certification committee is try to broaden the certification so that if this law passes, people will be able to become certified pre-K through 6. So that flexibility, which is awesome, you know. And we also, the governor put forward doing away with any licensing fee for the beginning teacher. Anything to get quality people in, and certainly to pay whatever, you know, we can toward an associate's degree. I mean, you know, it's free now, right, to go community colleges. And I think nothing's more important. And what my eyes were so opened on this, not just with 3- and 4-year-olds, but infants and toddlers trying to get there are so few openings for those for parents to bring their infants and toddlers in as well and return to the workforce.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's something to be said. I remember growing up in the 90s, and for a long time, I wanted to get into the healthcare sector because my mom was a nurse. And I feel like that essence of wanting to go back to those, I'm going to call them blue collar jobs, you know, a teacher, a nurse, police, whatever. I feel like that is we kind of went through, I think, a stretch. Like my generation to the next generation really went through a stretch of you got to go to the best colleges and get these crazy degrees. And, you know, we want you to go into this and this and this. And there's so much noise around what kids should be doing once they get out of high school. If we could somehow pull back a little bit, pull the reins on that and say, hey, you know, you've got these amazing opportunities to basically go to school for free if you just would go into early education, or if you wanted to become a nurse, you know, there are all these incentives now to do it. But even so, what you're saying, Fran, is even if they get their foot in the door, we are not doing enough to make it affordable. I mean, the fact that you're saying there are people on food stamps, that is just inexcusable. That's crazy.
And it is absolutely true. I heard the stories. And to your point, Melissa, I believe that, you know, secondary education, we really can do more there in micro-credentialing our students before they graduate so that they have some credits at the community college level in order to do things like childcare right out of the gate.
That's
at least they can start there. You know, I agree with you. We have to rethink the messages that we've been giving to our kids, because there are plenty of jobs. I mean, not believe me, if a student wants to go on to college, fabulous. But I also think we're not recognizing and holding it as
just as
level.
Great. I agree.
Yeah,
there's a huge disconnect.
That's
right.
What I'm saying. Great.
It's got to be even just the way that we talk about it. It can't just be a backup plan. Like, oh, if you don't get into I cannot stand the language around what do you do after high school? It's man, I could talk to you for hours, Fran Rabinowitz. Let me tell you.
I'm so glad.
Yep. I was going to say, we have run out of time, Fran, but I just love having you on the show. I know my listeners do, too, and I just want to thank you for having these deep conversations.
Anytime, Melissa. I'm so honored to be here and to talk about the things that really matter to me and I think matter to many, many people.
I agree. I agree with you, Fran. Thank you so much. I know we'll be in touch very, very soon. You have a wonderful holiday with your beautiful family.
Okay, you too, Melissa.
Thank you so much. You too. Fran Rabinowitz here.